So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Dennis Rodman is back in WCW.
If Rodman wants to wrestle that man right there, it'll break every record on pay-per-view.
I'm going to get you. Pick off your training bra, and I'm going to make you a man right now. I challenge you to come into the madness.
Dennis Rodman. Has taken Gorgeous George.
Randy Savage is going nuts backstage.
He is crazy.
Groovy. What's wrong, brother? Get your punk ass down here right now and let's rock this place. You think that I'm going to come to Sturgis with Gorgeous George with the worm out there? Well, guess what? I got the baddest person on the planet to protect her. It's also the driver of the Hummer.
You brought my ass all the way here to Sturgeon. You want to kick my ass, right? All I want to know is, where's my bitch? Where's she at?
Oh, boy.
Tonight, you're my bitch. And everybody out here, I invite you to fight for Sloppy Seconds. Should have never messed with the Macho Man Randy Savage, dude.
Right.
You're in trouble now. Oh no, you better watch yourself, cause I'm bad for your health and I'm about ready to blow. Now there's gonna be trouble. Oh no, you better watch yourself, cause I'm bad for your health. You're feeling the wrath of Macho. Now there's gonna be trouble. Everybody wants to talk. I heard it all before. By the time I'm done with you, you're laying flat on the floor. I'm the Macho Man, number one exterminator. You see me come your way, better say your prayer. I'm sick and tired of all the speculation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting with you another week. How are you doing, Wei?
Doing good. Another week, another coffee.
Another coffee. I am drinking the coffee that we make in our kitchen here at the Fight Network. It is horrendous. And you're drinking Aroma. Not
yeah.
Paul Roma, Aroma.
No, there's a coffee place. How detailed are we supposed to make these?
Make what?
The discussions about our the minutia of our lives.
You always feel that there's so much thought put into these. I really don't two thoughts.
I went to Aroma, everybody, which is a coffee place located directly from our office. But there are actually two coffee places.
They're competing.
Yes, but the distance between Aroma and my couch, I'd say, is approximately, I don't know, maybe 700 meters. It takes me about 5 minutes to walk. Is that right?
You said the distance from your couch to Aroma.
Oh, oops, I meant my desk.
Your desk. That'd be awesome if you worked on a couch here
at
work.
I drink soy with my coffee.
Why ruin it? Soy is disgusting.
I'm lactose intolerant.
No, you're not.
I am.
Really?
Like 90% of Asians are.
Oh, I didn't know that. You've never told me that.
Yeah. It's not something I pronounce to the world.
Oh.
Hey, everybody.
I am lactose intolerant, though you did just broadcast it to the world
right now. I guess. Well, we were having a discussion about coffee, and you showed disgust in soy. I love soy. I prefer it to milk, even if I wasn't lactose intolerant.
I find it gross. I'm just not a fan of soy in any conceivable fashion.
Yeah, well.
But this, the other one is Balzac's down the street, which sounds like a dirty word, but is actually spelt differently.
What happened to Starbucks? What happened to
Tim? I go to Starbucks.
Tim Hortons.
I still go to all of them. I still frequent. I mix it up every day because there's a Starbucks nearby and there's a Tim Hortons that's...
It's a lot of coffee every day then.
It's fine though. It's fine. I've been told it's fine for me.
Okay.
Yeah. This is only number three today. Wei Ting. Oops. Breaking some podcast etiquette right there.
Sorry about that. That was my phone, my iPhone. And that was the sound of an email coming in. I have received... An email.
Why don't you read it? Who's it from?
Let me get to it. All right. It's from chantommy87@yahoo.com.
Oh, man. Chan87.
And it's not even addressed to me. It's addressed to somebody named Gary@expresstimesystems.com.
You should reply to him and tell him about this error.
The subject is, who's run a background check on you? DUIs, tickets, criminal records, and a link in the body of the email saying, who is searching your criminal record? Should I check? I want to know who's searching my criminal
record. I would want to know who's searching for my record.
But I'm supposed to...
Do you have anything on your record? For the record?
Criminal record?
Anything. Do you have...
Like speeding tickets, yeah.
Speeding tickets. I have those. Parking tickets. You don't have any DUIs or...
No. I'm trying to think what the...
Elevated levels of testosterone.
Yeah, I can't say that I've been arrested for anything outside of some parking violation or some speeding tickets.
Yeah, that was... I was never arrested.
Never been caught with an ounce.
When I was like in grade 5 or 6, I went through a shoplifting phase where I would go and I would just like steal a chocolate bar at a convenience store.
You making this up? Or you
no, no, I did this when I was in like 5th grade.
Wow,
it's just a vandal. And
so you would steal a chocolate bar right for the thrill?
Yeah. I would just do it to show off to my friends and be like, hey, look what I got. This cost me nothing. I got it on sale for nothing.
You bitch.
Well, I feel terrible about it now. I would not do something like that today. But in 5th grade, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to do. So you would do what you could to amuse your friends.
That is a terrible excuse.
Yeah.
That's probably what these criminals say every day. There's nothing to do, so I
was certainly an attention whore, and like when I was like 10 or 11,
yeah,
that was always my goal, was to just get reactions from my friends. I would just try to amuse my friends.
It's very much like what you do today.
Yeah, well, it ended at the hands of my grade 5 teacher, Miss Murphy, who I shook this like bookshelf to like teased the people sitting there that it was going to fall, and the teacher just yelled at me and sent me to the principal's office. And then she came down. They would just let you rot in this detention area at my elementary school, and you just sit there for an hour doing nothing. And then my teacher comes down and she's like, what were you trying to do? And I said, I know this will sound crazy, but I was just trying to make people laugh. I thought it was funny. Obviously, this is a bookshelf. This bookshelf is not going to fall over. And she was like, you were trying to be funny? Well, here's some words of wisdom, John Pollock. You're not funny. And then she named this other guy in the class. Like, you know him? He's funny. You could learn from him. But you are not funny.
Wow.
It's like, that's, I understand I'm in the wrong here. But I think this is a little much to be telling a 10-year-old child.
He's not funny.
And sent me into a downward spiral of petty crime that thankfully I saved myself from.
Jesus, wow.
Yeah, that was the age of 10 for me, 10 and 11.
I had no idea you had such a troubled past.
Oh, it wasn't. By stealing, I mean I probably stole 5 chocolate bars in my lifetime.
That's
and then I tried it at a grocery store once, and my mom caught me.
Oh.
And she discovered this when we were in the car, and she not only made me go in and return it, she was like, no, you're not putting it back where you found it. You're going to one of the employees, and you're telling them what you did. I was like, that's unnecessary. I could get in trouble for this. But no, I had to go up, and I told the person at Value Mart, I stole this unwillingly, and I want to give it back to you. And she was so impressed that I came back and gave it back to her. And that was when my life of crime came to an end.
And she just said, no.
This is not worth the risk is not worth the reward, and I will now save up my money to buy a Mr. Big.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I didn't take you for a thief.
Come on, what have you done in your life that is considered crooked?
Nothing.
You've never cheated on a test. You never blackmailed someone. You never spread rumors about people at school.
Nothing.
You never pirated illegal pay-per-views.
Oh, come on. Stealing in real life is much worse than stealing
on
a computer.
Horrible. You're putting people out of work.
You're stealing chocolate from a Value Mart.
Very, very small trickle-down effect or trickle-up effect, I should say, to the mass producer.
Well, stealing is bad no matter what.
I don't condone stealing, folks. I always recommend you pay for it. In fact, I remember for a while after I did this. I went through a guilty conscience phase as well during elementary school. And I ended up, I would go to buy a chocolate bar at the same place, and I would always leave, you know, they give you your change, and there was always the tip jar, and I would always over tip. And in my head, I was paying back for the difference of what I had stolen.
That's nice. So the moral is, let your kids steal when they're young so they can learn this lesson.
The key is, a successful child is one who understands the error of their ways.
Right.
The one who ventures down the path of stolen items and finds their way back.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the key. And now we give way. Now we give this show for free to people. I think this has really come full circle.
I think you are more than entitled to stealing a few chocolate bars at this point.
Let's just screw with people who are quickly fast-forwarding right now to find the review. Road Wild took place from Sturgis, South Dakota. And now back to our conversation.
Yeah. What types of chocolate would you say you stole the most?
Man, I'm trying to remember. I really liked Mars bars when I was a kid. I can't remember exactly what I stole. I can't remember. And in a weird... a weird twist. My first job was selling chocolate bars. I think I've talked about this before.
Yeah, you have.
Door to door selling chocolate bars for $3.
Wow. Would you say that that maybe perhaps the chocolate was this a cry for help? Like, you know, did you find that you had lacked attention growing up?
Oh, that's an interesting slant on things. No, I just. I naturally just tried to show off to people I find in elementary school. And maybe there was something in there. Maybe I was just trying to maybe I had a big head when I was in elementary school.
I know you have a...
Because as you can see now, Wei, in our current work setup, I think I'm the opposite of trying to get people's attention. Now I try to avoid any attention.
Sean hates attention at work, in the office place.
So that's how things have worked out.
Okay.
And you've just had the same melancholy self. I know you have some dark stories.
No,
the mean
I mean, nothing,
streets of
not,
bro.
Nothing huge.
No?
Nothing huge.
No, we're not asking for anything huge. We're just asking for a little a lactose intolerant tidbit. Something that we thought. I never knew that about Wei Ting.
What is juicy? I used to get into fights.
Oh, that's pretty serious.
School. Yeah.
How did you do in fights?
Well, nobody would ever really win. You would just kind of like, you know, people would just break it up and then you would get sent to class. Or, sorry, get sent to detention.
Did you ever punch a guy in the face?
Yeah.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, that to me was the big, I was always in my head, if I find myself in a situation in a fight, I just don't know if I could punch another man in the face or another kid in the face.
What else would you do?
Because I was just too worried about, you know, if you knocked a tooth out or something, it was just like, man, I'm going to be liable for this. That's what I always thought.
No,
I always
really?
Thought of consequences. It was like, what is the value here? I punch a guy in the face momentarily, but I could get suspended.
Yeah.
And well, that was always my fear. My dad always said, just never get suspended. He had two rules for me when I was a kid. Don't get suspended from school and don't ever show up at home in a cop car.
That's
and other than that, my parents were just like, you don't do those things, you're free to do what you want as a kid. It's very strange, but very, I don't know. They
liberal.
Gave me a lot of leeway.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Never had curfews or anything like that. It was just that. You get home when you get home, just don't fuck up. That was pretty much it.
And you never got sent
came home in a cop car.
Well, that's good. That seems like a good parenting advice. Yeah.
But how did you do in these fights? What was the cause of one of these fights? Can you remember?
I really don't.
I always love what leads to fights among kids. Like, he stole my pug.
I really don't remember. This was, like, we were really young. We were, you know, and they were just, it was over nothing, like playground stuff. Like,
how old would you have been, roughly? Over or under 10?
I don't know. I probably at about that age, you know, so.
Were these frequent, or were they? Can you remember them?
At a time, they were.
Wow.
And then one day, my teacher just called my mom in, and then my mom just like, you know, broke down and
down crying like disappointment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once I saw that, I just, you know, pretty much.
Wow.
That really mellowed me out, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. You never want to disappoint.
No.
To me, that's worse than anger. I can take someone yelling at me, but just telling them, I was just really disappointed by what you said to me. Mm-hmm. That's something that's going to have a reserved spot in my body for the rest of my life. I'm always going to feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea of people being upset at me out there in the world.
Are you naming anybody in particular?
No. I've always tried with people that I know don't like me, because there have been a few. You've probably known most of them. I try eventually to mend fences, because it bothers me knowing that there would be people out there who have ill will towards me. Mm. Outside of the message board, I can take those. I'm amused by those more than anything.
They're not real people.
And people have every right to their opinion when it comes to my performance or my stats, for instance. But if someone genuinely doesn't like me, like our friend Diana in university, who didn't like me for a long time, that bothered me. And I eventually mended fences with her. But I was very stubborn for a long time. I felt I didn't need to be the one to mend the fence. But I have since made communication. And since that time, we've talked every now and then. And now the three of us are going to hang out some night.
Are we? When?
I don't know when, but eventually.
Okay. Eventually. Well,
is there anyone out there that hates Wei Ting? I can't imagine there being
anyone. I'm sure there are. I don't know. I'm sure there are. I mean, I don't...
Probably some guy who was 10 years old on the playground who just wanted to go on the swings.
Nah. I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't think I've ever been put in a position to mend a fence, I suppose. Or maybe there have been no fences I've cared to mend.
A guy who became my best friend in elementary school. We started kindergarten the same day. And I was, and they had it staggered for when the students would show up for their first day of kindergarten. So I got there ahead of most people, and I went to the kitchen set, and I was making my figurative breakfast. And then this other kid came in, and he was put next to me in the kitchen. And I was pissed because this was my area. I'm working on my breakfast here in the kitchen area.
Yeah.
And he grabbed the pan that I was using. Ooh. So I took the pan and I hit him in the head with the pan on my first day, and I got sent into the corner my first like half hour of school.
Wow.
And then him and me became friends afterwards, and he was always the shortest one in our class, so I always joked that I stunted his growth with that unprotected pan shot to the head, which today I do feel terrible about. Like what a dick I was, you know what I mean? I think that's when you can be your most objective, when you can look back at yourself and admit you were the asshole
totally,
in the situation.
Totally. You have no control over that.
Of course you do.
No, not at that age.
Oh, at that age, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's more of a result of your upbringing.
Everyone needs to be aware of their asshole moments and be aware that they've produced many of them.
Oh, totally. Absolutely, no doubt.
You know what was an asshole moment?
What's that?
Whoever booked Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash in 1999.
Right.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this?
Because we...
Actually, we got to see the exact play-by-play of you picking this last week.
Yeah, that's why.
Ooh, this was one where usually I feel bad when you're like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. But this time it was all on you. You made this decision to go to Sturgis, South Dakota in August of 99, a Saturday night pay-per-view in all their infinite wisdom. Wow. Road Wild, the last of the Wild pay-per-views.
This was the final edition of Road Wild, which is their annual trip to, as you mentioned, where is Sturgis?
South Dakota,
where
their annual Let's Not Make Any Money on Our Live Gate pay-per-view.
They basically have a show for all the bikers in attendance. And
your core demographic. Bikers?
I guess. I don't know. But you know what? There are some qualities to it that, looking back, are enjoyable. Like, for instance, I really enjoy the set. I like outdoor sets, and Sturgis would always be an outdoor set.
One thing that WCW never got credit for that I always enjoyed about them more than the WWF at the time was how they would brand their pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Every pay-per-view had a distinct set, like the Halloween Havoc with the giant pumpkin. Bash at the Beach was like this whole beachfront set. These ones, they look different for some of their thematic pay-per-views. And I always enjoyed that. That's really when they did the NWO Revenge Game. They had all the different sets, and I was like, this is awesome. They had a Bash at the Beach set and Halloween Havoc set.
You play the WWF game, and there's like Raw, SmackDown, WrestleMania.
But, you know, it's all – with a WWF event, it was always we're in a building, and we've put up some banners, They didn't have the feel to me that some of the WCW shows did. Yeah. That was one of the things I always liked about WCW pay-per-views, this one included. So
the thing is, a valid point. There's a lot of money going into these WCW events, and I'm assuming Turner backed a lot of the budget for elaborate sets like this. And not to say WWE can't afford that either, but maybe they just don't see the need to use that money.
WWF, to their credit, though, it's not like you just get these bland-looking sets. I mean, they still put a lot into their production.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about looking different. Like, one of the things I didn't like was these WCW pay-per-views. It was just... Man, match, video, match, video, match. It was such a tired formula by, like, match four. And their video packages were horrible.
Yeah, 1999, not exactly the best production available.
Even though this was a company. I mean, 98, they grossed more money than any wrestling company ever in 98.
Right.
But boy, was the bloom off the rose by August
of this year. I suppose production standards weren't really... with WCW, they were never super impressive. I mean...
I found 2001 was a big turning point for the WWF. Yeah. That's when they started doing all those music videos and...
The most high production value thing that I think WCW's done has been those beach videos back at Beach Brawl.
Remembered very fondly.
Sting and Sid.
Cheatham. The little midget.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. A lot of money put into those.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
those are classic.
Well spent money for at least people like us to go back and look at it. During this time period, August of 99, I was watching every WCW show every week. I watched Nitro. I watched Thunder. I usually watch Saturday Night, and I ordered pay-per-views. I don't know how I got through this time.
You actually found this copy of Road Wild 1999 as part of your collection.
Still in fantastic shape.
That was incredible.
This is a 13-year-old VHS, probably because it has not been watched once. I taped it and probably never watched this back. But this was a Road Wild taking place on a Saturday night, as I mentioned, and was 5 days after Chris Jericho debuted in the WWF on Raw.
Well, that's a good way to think about the timeline.
You were not watching WCW here.
No, I wasn't.
Were you ever a big WCW viewer?
I wouldn't say huge, no. I mean, just because we got it so infrequently, and I would always tune it on Saturdays. For the longest time, we would only really get Saturday night, or at least in my house, we would only get to see WCW Saturday night, and Nitro would be on maybe Wednesday starting at about 98 or so. But I never really made an appointment to watch.
Well, also on that Monday night, to counter Chris Jericho showing up on Raw, which had a huge buildup, WCW countered with Hulk Hogan returning to the red and yellow for the first time since he had turned heel 3 years ago.
And what brought about the change?
Nicholas. His son Nicholas, not
his,
Nick.
His Nicholas. Young son Nicholas Hogan. Who I remember, actually. I remember seeing this. He showed up in a Pokemon hat.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't remember
Hogan.
This at all.
This was definitely a much different Nick Hogan. Because, like, you know, this is my first time seeing Nick Hogan. And then all of a sudden, the next time I hear about him on a public stage was a reality show. And then it was the terrible accident. So he's definitely grown up.
So the show starts off with a video of Hulk Hogan winning the WCW title on the Nitro following their last pay-per-view, the Bash at the Beach, where he beat Randy Savage. The Mega Powers imploded on Nitro.
Huh.
And the big sound up here was Hulk Hogan threatening to kick Kevin Nash's butt. And then... announcing that this will be a retirement match in 1999. Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash. Men who have both wrestled in the last year on significant pay-per-views.
Yeah. Who put up the stip? Was it Hogan or Nash?
I can't remember.
Nash.
I think it was Nash.
Yeah. Well, maybe not.
Yeah. And thus, this, amazingly, this would be better than their first match of 99, the one-finger finish.
Right.
Anyway, we'll get to that main event. I want to set aside 2 hours on this podcast for that main event. But our announcers tonight are Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay talking about Hogan returning to the red and yellow this past Monday. And they discuss when Nash laid down for Hogan because it was, quote, the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do back in January. No, it was not. And tonight on the show, they're giving away an Iron Horse motorcycle.
Cool.
That's what I want to win. if I'm tuning into Road Wild.
Would you ever?
You probably had a hell of a chance if this was only open to people buying the pay-per-view.
Oh, it's still a tough contest to win, I'm sure. Who even knows if it's legit?
Yeah, imagine it's just a work contest. Yeah. They're giving it to a WWE employee under a fictitious name.
I always find, like, sometimes on The Ultimate Fighter, they give out those Harley Davidsons, and they're great, but I don't know. I find just because you're given a motorcycle, I don't necessarily think anybody is going to ride one.
I wouldn't want to win a motorcycle.
No, me neither.
I don't want to ride a motorcycle. That sounds nuts.
Just like I wouldn't want to win a Hummer either.
What about a Vespa? You recently applied in
a
contest to
win
a Vespa.
John and I were at a bar, and there was a contest to win a Vespa if you ordered a Mill Street, and I entered. I haven't heard back, so I'm assuming I didn't win.
Oh. Well, it ended on the 31st, they said.
Okay.
Which is, it was yesterday.
I would sell it if I won a Vespa. I would ride
You should
it.
Ride a Vespa. You fit the Vespa look.
All the way from Scarborough?
It'd be
highway?
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Could we tout at least one Vespa ride by you?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll do it for that.
Oh, man. They plugged the WCW hotline. 1-900-909-9900. 1-900-451-3332 in Canada.
Wow, good for you.
I wonder if it's still in operation.
You did that by memory. He didn't have notes here.
No,
they
grilled it into your head.
Damn, good for you.
I could be wrong, actually. We should call it.
Okay. We're going to call the WCW hotline. It is 2012. We have the technology. John Pollock is going to try to call.
Message 400. Security alert. Calls to this destination are not currently permitted. Message 400.
Oh, shit.
Well, what a letdown that was.
Sorry. Oh, well. We tried. If anybody can get through.
What was the Canadian number? Do you remember?
No, I wouldn't know. Let me look it up. WCW hot.
Yeah, look it up. We should call, because I called the American one there. I thought it wouldn't matter.
Could you imagine if it was still in operation?
That would be awesome. Coming up on Nitro, it's Vince McMahon is going to be at Nitro on Monday. For Lee Marshall, press 1. For Mark Madden, press 2. For Mike Tenay's Professor's segment, hit 3. For Dave Meltzer.
For Ross Foreman's WCW magazine.
Ross Foreman. Big presence on tonight's show.
Exactly.
Highlight of the show for me.
Well, I only find the American number, unfortunately.
You know what?
This is great, great radio.
No. This is fantastic radio. And you know what we're going to do, eh?
You're going to look up the actual show?
Hell yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're going to find it. We'll edit all this out.
No, this is all great stuff. Road. Because we, Wei did secure a...
But they're very slow. They're very slow links.
All right. Well...
Well, if anybody can get through...
We'll continue to discuss as we load this up, and then we're going
to
find...
There seems to be very... Like, the American number is very easy to get, but the Canadian one? Nearly impossible. This is our big project for the day. Our big assignment. We get paid here. We're getting paid big bucks to do this.
There's an ad for Asian Wave. Asian Wave.
Okay.
What the hell is this? This is not Road Wild, but it says that it's Road Wild.
Do you think people who work in our office have any idea what we do in here?
Not a clue. Nope. Okay. I don't know what this is. The Voice of China.
Yeah, we're going to edit all this out. This is just terrible. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. There's no, it doesn't seem
we're
to be
find
anywhere.
It. But,
anywhere
on we continue end. Onwards here with, Road Wild. And there's a video for the opening match, that consisted of all six men attacking each other. And that takes us to Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse, accompanied by Raven.
Also known as the Deadpool.
The Deadpool. And this would be Raven, one of Raven's final appearances before he would be offered to leave, and he would go to ECW.
What do you? Oh, he went back to ECW?
He was offered. Eric Bischoff got upset at a bunch of people and said, if you want to leave, you can get up and leave. And Raven said, I will do that. And he was like, fine, you can leave.
And he went to ECW and then he went to the WWE.
Yeah, he showed up at the end of August. I think that this might have been his last appearance,
okay.
For all we know.
So it was those guys taking on the team of Rey Mysterio, the unmasked Rey Mysterio.
A jacked up Rey Mysterio. Holy Christ.
Billy Kidman. Billy Kidman and Eddie Guerrero on the other side. One team, ICP and Vampiro, they say are brought together by music. Whereas the other team, I guess they're brought together by race. What is Kidman? What's his background?
White? He's from Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Yeah. You thought he was Latino?
I did, because they put him in the Filthy Animals, and I always thought the Filthy Animals were like a Latino group.
No, Kidman was just there as their white counterpart. Quite a lot of a pretty stacked six-man here with, well, one half.
What?
Kidman, Eddie, and Ray here in your opener.
Yeah, and the other half?
Well,
the insane
I said one half
posse.
Was really stacked. So this was during ICP's brief run with the company.
And what, I mean, they were brought on as not celebrities here. They were
brought on as wrestlers. These were celebrities by WCW.
No, they were brought in as actual in-ring talent.
Well, I mean, celebrity in-ring talent. They had a weird sense of celebrities at this point in 1999, which we will get into later, of some of the guys they were bringing in here from Chad Brock on down.
Mm-hmm.
Today here... I thought was great. He clearly did research. He starts plugging ICP's new album, The Amazing Jekyll Brothers, and then he's talking about all this different stuff involving ICP, which is just hilarious. And the babyfaces go after Vampiro at the start. Tanay says that the Mexicans have an advantage in this match. Do you know why, Wei?
Why?
Because they're fighting outdoors, and there's a lot of outdoor lucha shows, and they are used to competing under the sun.
Wow.
What a stat.
That's some great analysis.
That is logic at its forefront there from Mike Tanay. The heels attacked Eddie on the floor. This was after Eddie. He had suffered that terrible car accident on New Year's Eve. He returned in June of this past year, and by his own admission later, came back way too soon. And I think that was certainly the case still at this point in August.
Mm-hmm.
And... Tanay also mentions ICP will be part of the WCW Mayhem CD coming out this fall. And the announcers say that at the airport, everyone at the airport was talking about Hogan versus Nash.
Really? I found that hard to believe.
They didn't say in what light they were discussing Hogan versus Nash. Can you believe what they put in the fucking main event? God damn it, Hogan and Nash.
You could have said 13 years from now people will still be talking about this match. Amazing. And he'd be right.
Guerrero comes back, Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and then scales the top rope into a Hurricanrana on Vampiro. And Vampiro comes back with an enziguri and ICP with a double vertical suplex to Eddie. Guerrero selling for Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J.
It's one of the strangest sights you'll ever see. The legendary Eddie Guerrero selling for a long time here for Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J.
Mysterio got tagged in, hit a quebrada to Violent J. Raven then pulls Ray to the floor and sends him into the steps, and Vampiro hits a Michinoku driver to Ray on the floor, the Vampiro Spike, or the nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And Tanay starts talking about ICP, and after they got their first paycheck as a band, they bought a ring when they signed the record deal. And then Bobby Heenan, equaling the research, asked, "Were these the guys that did White Christmas?" Hilarious, Mr. Heenan, hilarious. Ray gets tossed to the floor, Raven taunts him, and then Shaggy 2 Dope runs into a boot by Ray, and then takes a split-legged moonsault. They make the hot tag to Kidman. Mysterio hits the Bronco Buster. Vampiro accidentally super-kicks Shaggy 2 Dope, and it leads to Kidman then hitting the Shooting Star Press to Shaggy for the win at 12 minutes and 23 seconds. About what you would expect out of this.
I actually thought the Insane Clown Posse, they weren't completely, they didn't look completely ridiculous here. I mean,
they could bump. I mean, there were guys that at least had worked before they got to WCW.
I mean, for celebrities, for musicians, they actually had some level of skill, like backyard wrestling level of skill, like people who had watched a long time and had done these moves to each other in swimming pools and everything. So they weren't completely ridiculous, but to see them with people on the level of a Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero is pretty crazy.
Yeah, a little in over their head here, under the bright sun. Shivani then plugs wrestling's top website, WCW.com, And they go to a video built around the reformation of Harlem Heat, the team of the 90s. Mm-hmm. Booker T and Stevie Ray back together again.
Yeah, after Stevie left the NWO.
And Booker got over as a single star, taking a step back. So hopefully Stevie could take a step forward.
Hmm.
That's how it seemed at the time. So we have Harlem Heat back together. And we've got Canyon and Bam Bam Bigelow, who were part of the Jersey Triad with Diamond Dallas Page, defending the tag titles against Harlem Heat. And this was great because on their way to the ring, Bigelow had the title around his waist and it fell off him and landed on the ground.
Oh, and did he notice?
Well, we picked it up.
Oh, okay.
But we just kept the camera on Bigelow as this title fell off the man.
Yeah, it happens.
Canyon tries to do mic work but is drowned out by motorcycles. And Tanay says that many wonder if Harlem Heat will take it into the new millennium. The answer was no, they would not.
Sure they would. What do you mean?
Would they take it?
Take what?
I don't know, their team?
Oh, I thought he just meant it as in, I don't know, success.
Way, we talk a lot with MMA fighters about cage rust, but Hina and Tanay, they discussed tag rust.
Mm-hmm.
If there would be tag rust for Harlem Heat, because they've been competing in singles action for so long, and now they've got to revert back to tag team psychology. And would there be tag rust?
Yeah.
And I guess we got our answer, if tag rust was a myth or not. The storyline is that Ric Flair, they just brought this up out of nowhere. Ric Flair was the president of WCW, but now Sting is the president.
It sounds like a very familiar storyline.
What are you talking about? Sting in a authority figure position?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. Very slow and basic at the start. A few power spots by Stevie Ray. And then Canyon got the advantage onto Booker. Bigelow and Stevie Ray tagged in, and they did these equal strength spots. Canyon is mocking the bikers at one point. And then Bigelow comes in, gets a rear chin lock, and wears down Stevie. Booker's tagged in. He gets knocked to the floor, and they play up tag rust. He's suffering from tag rust. And Canyon hits a top rope rocker dropper for a two count. Goes for it again, but this time it gets turned into a powerbomb by Booker, who then tags Stevie, and he comes in with just this awful-looking offense and worse selling. DDP then runs down, gets on the apron, and Bigelow gets thrown into DDP, and Booker hits a missile dropkick to Bigelow. Stevie pins Bigelow for the win, and they win the tag titles at 13 minutes and 10 seconds as Schiavone and Heenan enjoy the play on words using Bam Bam to describe the finish.
Yeah.
Bam Bam.
Well, this was really slow, and this was really boring. And there was no redeeming value whatsoever to watching it.
Did kind of set the stage for our next couple of matches, though. So Road Wild moves on. And we next go to a video package of Kurt Hennig saying with Perry Saturn. And Hennig tells Perry, "You call yourself Saturn, but you look more like Uranus."
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Pay-per-view match is on. With a six-man tag. These videos, Way, I just thought they were so basic, and God, they didn't bring any interest to these matches.
You're telling me if this was if Martin Scorsese directed these videos, would they be any better? I don't know if you could.
It's just like, let's find a soundbite without any context and just to tell you that these two don't like each other. That's it. It was just nothing. Didn't tell any kind of story. There was no point to these videos other than a way to get the wrestlers out of the ring for the next match to get ready to come out.
Yeah.
That's what these videos were. So we had the West Texas Rednecks, Kurt Hennig, Barry Windham, and Bobby Duncombe Jr. taking on The Revolution, consisting of Perry Saturn, Dean Malenko, and Shane Douglas. Douglas, who had just jumped ship from WCW over to, or sorry, from ECW rather, over to WCW for a giant money contract, as guys with any kind of name were being offered at this point in time. Saturn gets on the mic, says he is here to make a statement, and calls them ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
This was really Perry Saturn's angle. He got the most attention out of the three Revolution members, so it seemed like he was getting a push here.
Yeah, at this point. Heenan notes that he managed all of the Rednecks' fathers.
Interesting.
Very interesting note. Schiavone and Heenan, they had this hilarious conversation about guaranteed contracts and people taking time off for minor injuries, I found this hilarious, given the state of things in WCW at the time.
Right.
But it was just so funny. They worked it into the storyline of guys who they get a tiny little injury and they take all these months off because it doesn't affect their pay.
Huh.
Very funny. After selling, Saturn hits a German suplex to Dunkum and then tags Malenko in. Douglas sends Hennig crotch first into the post from the floor, but then gets tossed into the ring off the top rope. They wear down Douglas. Then all six are brawling in the ring, as Schiavone calls it, a Sean Wheelock Pier 6 brawl. And Kendall comes into the ring with the cowbell. Shane sends him to the floor, and Saturn hits the DVD to get the win at 10 minutes and 57 seconds. And Saturn takes one of their cowboy hats and stomps on it.
Ooh, ouch. A very average match, not much of a finish. It's, you know, just a brawl and then a finisher.
And we should mention here, Wei, quite a few participants on this card no longer with us. Bobby Duncombe Jr., Chris Canyon, Bam Bam Bigelow. I'm not sure if there were any other. There were definitely
Eddie.
Others. Eddie, Benoit. I'm trying to think if there were any others, but yeah.
Oh, Randy Savage.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I find mid to late 90s WCW not a great track record, nor is mid to late 90s ECW, I guess mid to late 90s WWF,
yep.
Mid to 90s anything in wrestling.
Yeah.
From there, Tony Schiavone says, "We're now going to go to a video package, if you guys don't mind, with Buff Bagwell and Ernest Miller." And Heenan gets in, "I'd rather not," as they cut to the video. And I laughed. I thought it was very funny. So we go to this video, Buff Bagwell against Ernest Miller. I was so excited for this match. Buff Bagwell was actually getting a big babyface push here in the spring of 99 going into the summer. They had huge hopes for Buff Bagwell to one day be like their Rock. They wanted him to be this huge star. And can we officially categorize it as a miss?
I think you could say that. He ended up being more like... I don't know. Who would be the equivalent of a Buff Bagwell, would you say? They're Lex Luger. Not even.
No, I would not say. I would say Luger had his time period.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this video featured every cliche wrestling feud angle. We had Bagwell dress up as Ernest Miller, stole his ruby shoes. They were feuding over shoes.
Oh, some fun storytelling here.
Ernest Miller comes out, accompanied by Sonny Ono. Miller was just riling up this old guy who just is yelling at Ernest Miller from the front row. And Miller's just goading him. And then this biker just yells at him and then grabs his hand and grabs his dick and, like, gyrates it at Miller.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it. Miller, did you notice his hand tape? He had Confederate flags taped onto his wrists.
I did notice that.
To like, and there was a spot in the match where like they were booing him, and he put up the Confederate flags, saying, "Hey, I'm like you guys. I'm a bigot." Hilarious. So anyway, Miller gets on the mic, calls them rednecks, threatens to beat them all up. And you know this is an old show when Heenan says, "If that happens, we're gonna be here until May of 2008. And Bagwell then gets them to rev their bikes as Miller then holds up his gloves. The fans start chanting "Pussycat" at Miller. I enjoyed Ernest Miller during this time when they really made him the full-fledged heel. I mean, not a great worker by any stretch, but someone that I did enjoy his mic work at the time and his dancing. I mean, he was a character that I thought did get over during this time period. They exchange punches on the turnbuckle. Saw some some fascinating rear chin locks that were just world class.
Oh, it's a signature move, isn't it?
Atomic drops were dropped. And Miller gets sent into the ropes. Sonny Ono tries to interfere with the briefcase, but Miller gets hit in the head with the briefcase by mistake. And then Bagwell, God, poor Pat O'Connor watching this, probably was regretting lending his name to this roll-up. Just shaking in his boots as Bagwell tried to execute this. It looked terrible. 7 minutes and 23 seconds. And then after the match, Miller attacked Bagwell and laid him out. And they mocked him with Ono doing Bagwell's dance. and they posed afterwards. And apparently something just didn't go according to plan here, because in the back, Bagwell was furious about this, and these two got into what was surely a much better match in the back and got into a fight.
Is that right?
And Bagwell was sent home.
Sonny Ono?
No, or? Ernest and Buff got into a fight in the back.
Oh, wow. I wish
it was either
that.
This show or the next night on Nitro. I think it was this show. And Bagwell got sent home, and I think he had to apologize to Ernest Miller. But anyway, a lot of hotheads at this time.
Maybe they're upset.
Business is taking a dive, and guys are getting pissed.
Yeah, this is shit. This is really boring. I fell asleep.
What? You fell asleep, Way.
Yep. Sorry, I don't have that much to add. I was so bored here. And,
but there was so much to talk about. Way
it just drained me completely of my energy while I was trying to watch this, and so I took a real nap after this. It was a real struggle.
How many viewings did you need? Like, how many sittings did this take? Because I had to stop after three matches, and then I could only watch one match at a time. Before.
Right now, I really try to barrel through them. So
I try and do the same, I could not.
Even if I try, if I do fall asleep, I gotta do it, man. I gotta do it. Just like how Olympians train, even if they're really tired or if they don't want to, I have to do this. I've got to do it. And so I think I got through it in like two sittings.
So then our next match was DDP challenging Chris Benoit, who had just won the title, the U.S. title on Nitro that week from David Flair. And this video for their match, it revolved around Yo Mama jokes.
Huh.
Did you not see this?
I did, but I don't remember. I'm really sorry. You might as well just do this by yourself, because I really have nothing to add.
You are not getting out of this review.
It's like I watch these shows sometimes, and I just have no opinion, because they're just moving pictures, and they just don't elicit any type of reaction from me. They're just nothing.
I'm getting distracted by this video. I cannot find this hotline number, so maybe it may be another time. And when we do another WCW pay-per-view,
yeah,
we'll call.
Anyway, a really tough show to watch.
This had the most surreal moment, though, of this entire show, though.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. I couldn't believe this. Chris Benoit defending the U.S. title against DDP, a no DQ match for the U.S. title. DDP comes out, and he gets on the mic and says his catchphrase. He had turned heel. You love me, you hate me, you'll never forget me, because I deliver the goods all night. And he apologizes to Benoit's mother for the joke he made, saying that he knows Benoit loves his mother, and says, and so can anyone else for $2.99 a minute. Ooh. And does the Andrew Dice Clay at the end of it. Wow. Revolutionary mic work here in 1999.
Yeah.
And Dice.
Yeah.
Shivani says that this is the scene of one of DDP's greatest matches, where he teamed with Jay Leno, and his career took off since that match, which was 1 year ago, where he was in the main event, and 1 year later, mid-card for the U.S. title. I would argue his career did not take off after that. I would argue that was maybe his...
Oh, he won the title afterwards.
His peak draw... I think, though, in terms of his biggest notoriety, it was that summer where he teamed with Karl Malone and then Leno.
Right.
He was on The Tonight Show. That was probably the peak of the DDP character, was that summer of 98.
That's so weird. At one point here, they're fighting. Did you realize, John, that they were fighting on this elevated stage?
Yeah, they always did that for the Road Wild one. It would have been terrible sight lines if they weren't elevated.
Right, but it just looks so dangerous, because there is the ring, and then the apron, or sorry, the mats that are surrounding the ring, they're on an elevated stage. So these guys would be fighting on the outside on the mats, and they'd be in danger, it looked like, of always falling off of this elevated stage.
Well, it's a no DQ match, Way. It's they're selling violence.
Yeah.
Like falling down a 2 foot drop. So they fight to the floor. DDP gets the heat early on, stomps Benoit, hits a spine buster. Benoit gets put in the Tree of Woe and then gets whipped by a belt that DDP was wearing, as Heenan then starts asking Shivani and Tanay if their dads whipped them as children, and they were split. Tanay got beat as a child, and Shivani did not. DDP then takes the belt and chokes Benoit with the belt. And Mike Tenay says that he is choking the life out of Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
This was uncomfortable, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So uncomfortable that I texted Wei. I was like, can you believe this? Then DDP picks up Benoit over his shoulders with the belt. And we hear Shivani yell, he's hanging him. I can't watch any more Benoit matches. I think I'm done. I don't think I can watch any more.
Oh, let's put a ban on all Chris Benoit matches.
This is just too fucked up.
We will skip all Chris Benoit matches from this point forward on this podcast.
So Benoit gets out, fights back. Benoit hits a German bridge for a two count. And then it hits another one. Then a third one. DDP keeps kicking out. He calls for a headbutt, but Canyon runs down and shoves him off as the Revolution just watches from the back. They're like, he'll be fine. And DDP then shoves into Canyon on the apron, gets rolled up for a near fall. Then Bigelow runs down, still not prompting the Revolution to help Benoit. And he goes for a splash off the top to Benoit, but instead Benoit drops both of them and then lands onto the groin of Bam Bam Bigelow as he falls forward. And then Benoit hits a top rope headbutt to DDP, and he retains the title. 12 minutes and 15 seconds.
I didn't quite understand the whole thing with the Revolution. Why didn't they come out?
I don't know. They didn't explain it. I don't know. Maybe they were just letting Benoit get outnumbered and prove a point.
I was really lost. Sorry.
This was a very strange match.
It's a strange pay-per-view.
Chad Demiani, the deli boy.
What?
He was their WCW.com guy. He was giving out the Iron Horse motorcycle.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And the winner was Darnell from Pennsylvania. And they handed over to the representative from American Iron Horse, who says into the camera, Darnell, buddy, if you're watching, you got a good one.
Huh.
So Darnell from Pennsylvania wins the American Iron Horse motorcycle.
That's great.
Then they just randomly hit off some fireworks in the middle of the day. Couldn't even see them. What a waste of money. But so was that was par for the course this time. Excited about the next match. This was the worst part of the pay-per-view for me, where they said, we still have four more matches left. Starting things off with Sting, the president of WCW, in a conflict of interest match with Sid Vicious. How can a president be having matches?
I don't know. It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Sid's gimmick here was that he was the Millennium Man in WCW, and he was going to beat the streak of Bill Goldberg, which would turn out to be the worst streak gimmick ever for Sid, where wins were turned into choke slams.
What do you mean?
He used to beat guys, and then they just start adding to the number. Like, one week he's 56-0, the next week he's 90-0. Then he would just choke slam people, and those would become two wins. He'd just run into every match and choke slam guys. Then they tried to break down the power structure in WCW. You see, Sting is the president, Dusty Rhodes runs the championship committee, and J.J. Dillon is the head of something else. So there's your chart.
I'm not a business major, or I don't know anything really about corporations, but
this is how long we've been putting up with authority figure gimmicks in wrestling. Yeah. This was 13 years ago, and it hasn't changed one bit in wrestling. It's just, if you do a wrestling show, you need a power figure.
What's an impressive-sounding title we can give to this guy?
President, CEO, general manager, commissioner.
You know,
head of the championship committee.
It's actually not too much unlike what real companies are. I'd say all bullshit titles are given out all the time.
But I don't have to watch them every week on television.
Yeah.
Sting tries to take Sid to the floor and go over a barricade, and then they just proceed to walk around the ring. Sid gets the advantage back in the ring. Just rest spots galore here. We saw a clothesline from Sid, which was pretty much the high spot of the match. He drops Sting on the barricade on the floor. Sid's big move here was where he would stand behind Sting, clasping his hands under the chin of Sting and put his knee into his back. And Sting would fight out, shoulder block Sid, and then the exact same spot we saw from Benoit, Sting falls over, landing on the groin of Sid. And then Sid gets tossed off the top rope. Sting goes for a splash into the corner. But Sid grabs Sting by the throat, chokeslams him, and gets the clean win at 10 minutes and 42 seconds. And Tony Schiavone says, "The win streak continues without a loss." Unnecessary three words at the end of that sentence, but nonetheless, the win streak continues without a loss. I was excited.
Yeah, this was great.
Poor Way.
I'm sorry. I just, I don't know. I watched these, and then I just, I had a really bad time. I don't know why.
What's going on, Way? What's happening?
This was just a really nothing show.
Dan Lavransky listens, and he gets very concerned when you're so beaten down by programming.
Yeah.
This is one of those days.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dan. Thank you for your concern. I just don't know. I wish I could add something to your discussion, but I'm watching these shows, and they're just...
They're tough, Way. They're tough to get through.
They just exist.
I paid for this show back in the day. I spent $30 on this.
There's just nothing special about this match. Nothing. Just nothing.
It's going to be okay, Way. We're going to get through it. We're going to power through. We got three more big, big matches to go.
All right, let's do it.
Kicking things off with Rick Steiner and Bill Goldberg. Rick Steiner was the television champion at this time, though you'd never know it from watching this because they did not mention that because the TV champion had to do a clean job. This was when you think of Bill Goldberg, Way, what are some of the things you think about associated with the Bill Goldberg character? What do you think of when I say Bill Goldberg, 1999 WCW?
You think about the entrance.
What about the entrance?
Oh, the fireworks.
The fireworks. Anything else about the entrance?
And the bodyguards.
Yeah. Does the theme music rank up there for you?
Yeah.
Pretty iconic theme, I thought, for wrestling at the time.
I'd say so.
And WCW, in their infinite wisdom, decide, let's change it. Let's give them Crush 'Em by Megadeth.
Hmm.
Why would you change this?
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's what he came out to. Crush 'Em. And amazingly, these signs showed up in the crowd that read, "Crush 'Em" and "Fear the Spear." And based on the bikers here, I don't think they were bringing signs to this show. I would venture to guess these were planted signs. They actually had a good physical exchange to start things off with a very stiff clothesline by Goldberg. And then this crazy spot where Steiner went for a flying reverse elbow but got pummeled in midair by Bill Goldberg. I thought both men were dead. Steiner goes to the floor and comes back with a low blow, and Bill Goldberg had to sell here. And Rick takes the left knee brace off of Bill Goldberg and wraps it around his arm and beats down Goldberg with his knee brace. And Goldberg continues to sell. Then he comes back with a press slam, a spear. Crowd was really into the comeback, and then hits the jackhammer. So at least this one was short. 5 minutes and 40 seconds. And Megadeth reverberated throughout the Sturgis rally.
Yeah, this was fine. Apart from Goldberg refusing to sell the knee afterwards, after the entire match.
This is Goldberg. This is the guy they were plugging. He was going to be in Universal Soldier.
That's right. Well, it was fine. It was just a Goldberg match. He does his moves, gives the fans what they want. Didn't need to be longer than what it was.
Then, a match we were all looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Third match in Dennis Rodman's WCW career. As he was paired with Randy Savage with the storyline that Dennis Rodman stole Randy Savage's girlfriend, Gorgeous George.
And kidnapped her.
And apparently raped her. Because he took her into his trailer and threw out part of her clothing as they were trying to get into the trailer.
Ooh.
That's what I took from this. And somehow in this video... God, WCW was bringing in some weird guys. We had Robert Wool from Arliss doing commentary. I don't know if you caught
this. I don't know who that is.
And Robert Wool states on the Nitro broadcast that if Rodman and Savage were to fight on pay-per-view, it would break every record ever.
Mm.
It didn't. Rodman was then paired here on TV with the remnants of the No Limit Soldiers, including Swole.
Swole. It sounds familiar.
Yeah, he was part of the Masterpiece group, the No Limit Soldiers, and he was this guy that I read for a lot of these WCW pay-per-views. My guide of reference is Death of WCW by Brian Alvarez and R.D. Reynolds. So I read up a little on this time period. This guy, Swole, got signed to a contract by WCW. He was making $400,000 a year.
Swole.
And Rodman... got $1 million for this.
It's absolutely.
Like, they must have lost money on this pay-per-view.
Oh, no doubt.
Holy shit. And the draw here was that this was Rodman's first singles match, and he's used to team sports. So maybe he's going to have tag rust.
No.
Or singles rust. This was at a time, folks, as much as you might look back and be like, oh, this was Dennis Rodman. This had no interest going into this pay-per-view. No one cared about Dennis Rodman the third time around. It was really big when he came in 97 for the Uncensored show. It was, and then he came in for an Uncensored show just to be in their corner. Then he fought at the 97 Bash at the Beach. Then the 98 one was massive because you had Rodman skipping the practice with the Bulls to go to Nitro. You had Karl Malone coming off of the NBA Finals. That was huge. This, no one cared. Rodman was about to start with the Dallas Mavericks after leaving the Lakers, and he was really off most people's radar. And this did not really generate much interest. So, anyway, the babyface, Dennis Rodman, kidnapping Gorgeous George. And that was our setup here.
And where was Gorgeous George on this evening?
Probably hiding.
Well, Randy Savage says that Gorgeous George, has the best protection in Sturgis to protect her. And he also says that this is also the driver of the Hummer. He casually says this.
He did?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah.
He said Rodman was the Hummer driver?
No, he says Gorgeous George's security for the evening.
Oh, okay, so it's still a mystery.
The driver of the Hummer.
Oh my God.
He just brings this up. What an odd way to
And didn't we learn that it was Kidman and Bischoff in the Hummer on that Nitro we reviewed?
I think it's been a few people.
Yeah. Well, maybe Kidman and Gorgeous George.
What an odd way to say so, somebody's here. Like, he knows this guy who tried to run over somebody. You know?
Well, that's who maybe you'd want protecting your woman. Savage had a new theme song here where it started off with a random female voice saying, "What up, Mach?"
That was Gorgeous George's voice.
Was it her voice?
Yeah.
And then Rodman comes out in this robe, and he gets on the mic and asks Randy, "Where's my bitch? Where's she at?"
Mm-hmm.
Very, very endearing baby face here.
Are you sure about that? I don't think he's a baby face.
He was positioned as the baby face going into this.
He kidnapped the woman.
Yeah, but Savage was a heel at this point.
I think they were both heels. That's what I was confused about.
Brilliant. Brilliant matchmaking.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
So then Savage gets on the mic and says, "Tonight, you're my bitch," and invites the crowd to fight for sloppy seconds.
Great writing.
Fuck. Rodman then attacks Savage with the mic and sends Savage into the steel post. And Rodman here, on the advantage, hits a back elbow and hits a reverse Russian leg sweep. Bobby Heenan, this was just came off so sad when he said, "Every major media outlet is here. There look to be none in attendance." Rodman,
WCW Magazine.
Yeah, Chad Demiani and Ross Foreman were in attendance. And Rodman gets upset at a slow count and clotheslines referee Billy Silverman. So then Mickey J runs down. This leads to Savage getting the heat, drops him on the top rope, and attacks photographer Ross Foreman, who is identified as such from WCW Magazine, and takes Foreman's camera and attacks Rodman with the camera. And then Savage attacks Mickey J. Scott Dickinson then gets knocked out, the third referee. Rodman hits a back body drop to send Savage to the floor, and they fight up the ramp and to the back area, which led to chance of bullshit for the crowd that paid nothing to see these men. And Rodman gets sent into a bag of garbage. Rodman is then put into a porta potty by Savage, and Savage tips over the porta potty, and shit began to flow out of the porta potty.
Yeah. That's.
I told Way, who had never seen this match, that the finish was shitty, but this was actually not the finish. I was mistaken. And this Savage got thrown into a bus. They fought back to the ring. Rodman misses a flying clothesline off the second rope, to which Savage ducked, and our next referee, Johnny Boone, is taken out. And then Gorgeous George runs down wearing those 1999-centric goggles. Remember those goggles that people wore?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This was the big thing in 98-99. Goggles. You ever own a pair of goggles?
Swimming goggles, yeah.
Yeah, these are just people who go out in the street wearing goggles because you never know when a typhoon might hit your metropolitan area.
You might want to go skiing sometime.
You never know, Wei, especially in the heat of Sturgis in August. And she passes a chain to Savage, and Savage hits Rodman with the chain, and Rodman puts his arm under the bottom rope, I guess to protect himself in case of a rematch down the line. And Savage gets the win, 11 minutes and 31 seconds, and Shivani calls it a match we will never forget until the next match occurs.
Well, this was no
This was fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
This was as bad as any match you'd find two kids having in their living room. This was that level of skill involved. It was pretty awful. I just find it very odd that on this show you have sports and music celebrities being given equal ground as these wrestlers. I mean, usually celebrities do guest spots. They might host a ring announce or something. Here they're legit contenders, and people like Randy Savage have to sell for him. Like, imagine if like Ben Affleck or somebody fought five rounds with Anderson. Ridiculous.
Well, I can't even say this was the worst match on the card. That would be reserved for our main event, I felt.
Oh, they're all bad. They're all
Michael bad. Buffer introduces the main event, making another ridiculous amount of money. It's amazing how much money this company was bleeding at this time. Hulk Hogan defending the WCW title against Kevin Nash in a career match. And this is where they bring up Nicholas bringing the red and yellow to his father on Nitro. And we got a collar and elbow spot to start the match. Tanay says that each man is one mistake away from ending their career. So Shivani says to expect a cautious match as a result. And there were all these like cryptic descriptions by Shivani and Tanay basically saying this match sucks. Why did you buy this? Why are we calling this? Horrible. The longest headlock spot you're going to see. Shivani had the gall to call this the most important match of the summer. This wasn't even the most important match of the night. We got a test of strength spot with Nash winning. And Hogan battles back to his feet, takes a knee to the gut, and then Hogan sold. Nash, how many elbows did he hit into the corner as he did his frame up with his hands? I counted like five.
Well, I kept falling asleep during this match, too. And
this was one of the laziest executed main event matches I've seen in maybe my life.
Sure. Yeah, it really was just, it was a lot of slow walking.
This was insulting.
A lot of slow walking around the ring. Occasionally, they would shove somebody's head into an object and then just weak looking like chokes and shit.
Nash goes after his lower back, chokes him with his boot. They say that Nash's strategy, Nash's strategy is not to expend energy. It is to be methodical. Fuck, this guy couldn't have broken a sweat during this. I use the word match in the loosest sense. Nash, again, he does the crotch chop twice during this match with more elbows into the corner. Then we get a big boot from Nash. He goes for the power bomb. This power bomb, I was in amazement Hogan took. That was by far the biggest maneuver of this entire contest. And Hogan kicks out of the power bomb and starts hulking up. He actually bladed off a big boot. Why? Don't fucking humor us here. You're not gonna even work this match and you'll blade for us. Save your plasma. Fights back with some punches, hits the big boot, leg drop, 1, 2, 3, 12 minutes and 18 seconds. I had to check my stopwatch to make sure that it wasn't 2 hours and 12 minutes. Then these fireworks went off, the only fireworks you saw during this main event. And Shivani calls this Hulk Hogan's greatest title reign in his history. Just a completely, one of the worst main events we've ever reviewed. I would say Heroes of Wrestling is the only thing I can think of off the top of my head that was a worse main event than these two who just nothing. Like, just complete uninterest in doing anything here. I'm all for guys that can get by on charisma and not have to bump themselves to death, but this was just like, Jesus Christ.
This was bad.
These were your leaders in the locker room, one of the guys being the booker at the time, and this was the main event we're going to set. This, to me, was an infomercial for SummerSlam the next weekend that the WWF would be presenting. Horrible main event. Horrible show. I give this show a 0.1 out of 10.
What's the 0.1 for?
I enjoyed the outdoor setting, and I thought the Mysterio, Kidman, and Eddie worked a good opening match. 0.1 out of 10.
Well, I give this a 0. I can't think of a show where I've had, in recent memory, a harder time to watch, and it just really sucked the energy out of me. Just even sitting here thinking about it for the past hour.
You're out of it.
It just, it was very hard. And it is very hard. Absolutely no redeeming value to this broadcast whatsoever. Never, ever, ever.
We will never sway you.
Watch
people.
This.
If we don't like it, we will definitely make sure you don't have to sit through it.
Oh, and Kevin Nash stayed retired for about a 2 months or
yeah,
a month.
Yeah, really a big thank you to if you did actually spend $30 on this. A real nice kick in the balls. Well, 2 month retirement. This is what we would call a WWE vacation.
Fuck. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Sorry, everybody, if you're expecting any type of deep insight into
this
Wild
from me. Road Wild 99.
But,
some sorry. People watch this way on our message board.
I know.
Let's head over. We're going to start off with Brian Bennett, who leaves us a comment up at lawradio.proboards.com. This pay-per-view. I remember visiting my hometown in New York a few years ago and finding this at a local video store for a few bucks, along with Uncensored 99 and Survivor Series 98. And I left it up there. I still haven't gotten it back, and I'm pissed, especially after watching it over online. I'm allowed to pirate it. I technically own a copy, goddammit. And seeing how surprisingly good it was, I hope my cousin is miraculously listening to this and decides to mail it back down here. Getting to the event itself, I was shocked to see how hot the crowd really actually was. Considering that everyone got in for free, you'd expect them to be lukewarm or to have little or no idea who the wrestlers are or what was going on. The revving of the engines was equivalent to the air horns at old CZW shows and was at times hilarious, such as Canyon's promo. And did anyone else notice the sound of a cow mooing at times? Anyway, the venue itself really helped this show. What didn't, however, were the video packages. God, were these terrible. So fast-paced and quick cuts made it impossible to figure out what the hell the storyline was going into the matches. The opener surprised me, actually, very much. ICP was surprisingly very good in the ring. The Harlem Heat triad match was good at first, but then seemed to drag, and I feel went way too long, even though the finish was well executed. The six-man tag, that you forgot to list in this thread, between Douglas, Saturn, Malenko, and the West Texas Rednecks was alright, but the best part was the Rednecks entrance song. That's going to be stuck in my head for weeks, and I'm glad Saturn dropped the cross-dressing gimmick. This is getting a little lengthy already, so I'll skip to my favorite part. The Savage Rodman match. I own a Dennis Rodman Lakers jersey, and I wear it all the time in tribute to his time in WCW, but nobody gets the reference and just thinks I'm a weirdo. I don't expect them to understand anyway. It's more for me. Rodman was awesome, just a great heel, and he played to his strengths despite being booked in a semi-main event against the Macho Man. This was so entertaining, and I wanted to see Savage kick the shit out of Rodman so badly. Sure, the match was boring at times, but overall very entertaining. The porta potty spot was gold. Main event was surprisingly good. Some nice old-school storytelling. One thing I really did like was the fact that they kept pushing that someone's career would indeed end. Hey, they tried. He gives this a 7 out of 10, a rare good pick for WCW in some weird times. I can't disagree more, Brian. I'm sorry.
Everybody's entitled to their opinion. Rob King. Oh, geez, where to start? How do I know Russo booked this crap?
He didn't, actually, folks. This was not a Russo show. He was still in WWF.
The rumor at this time was that Shaggy 2-Dope from ICP was rumored to win the Cruiserweight title. Well, at least it would be better than Arquette winning the world title. But the show was only remembered, and I use that term loosely, for two final matches. My favorite part of Rodman and Savage is when Rodman does a Russian leg sweep, one of the simplest moves in wrestling, and Tanay and Schiavone lose their shit, acting like Rodman is the second coming of Flair. After that, I was really looking forward to the main event at Fall Brawl, Dennis Rodman versus a broom. Bobby Heenan gets my Comment of the Night award, though. In the main event of Nash and Hogan, Heenan says, "These are the two biggest draws in wrestling." He says this at the show with about 5,000 people at it and a total gate of $0. The opener was better than it had any right to be. Benoit and DDP was good, and the tag title match was fine, but other than that, this show is painful. I give this show a 7 out of 46.
A 7 out of 46. Well, there you go. That's an interesting breakdown. Rob Tonkinson writes, Admittedly, I either couldn't find the time or just couldn't find this whole show, so I watched the last two matches, which I assumed were the biggest draws. Rodman Savage was an all right match, being from England and being five when this show aired. I don't know who Dennis Rodman was or is, and if I'd watched this match with the sound off, I'd have presumed the guy was the heel. But seeing as the crowd cheered him, I presumed he was the face, even though in the 90s style of anti-hero gimmicks really was not so apparent when he went for arrogant pinfalls and knocked out a referee. Although I suppose it was evened up by Savage, the actual heel knocking out two referees and a photographer, still not the worst celebrity match I've ever seen. As for the main event, maybe I've been spoiled by fast-paced matches and high energy, but this seemed really, really slow. It seems so reminiscent for me of the Lesnar-Goldberg match from WrestleMania 20, which sticks in the memory as I've just re-listened to your review of WrestleMania 20 the other day. The ending also seemed very lackluster. Nash supposedly lost his career at a one leg drop despite beating the living daylights out of Hogan for the whole match. After actually being pumped for this match by the energetic announcement by Buffer, I felt so let down by how melodramatic this really became. Maybe WCW knew no one believed that either Hogan or Nash would be having their last wrestling match on this card. Also, as a huge fan of pre-match video packages, these from WCW have to be among the worst I have seen, especially compared to the WWF's back then.
From Mike O'Brien. I didn't used to watch wrestling during this period, and boy, if WCW used to be like this, then I'm glad I didn't watch during this time. Everything about this show is awful. The show started with a solid tag match in the Insane Clown Posse and Vampiro versus Mysterio, Kidman, and Guerrero. Unfortunately, it was mostly downhill from there. The next tag match was terrible and also had a smart decision to have Harlem Heat be booked as the babyface team in a redneck-filled biker rally in South Dakota.
Yes.
What's the best thing to put in after two tag matches? Another tag match featuring the West Texas Rednecks. Line of the night goes out to Schiavone when he called Malenko's dropkick a suplex. This match was horrendous and made me wish I had 11 minutes of my life back. The Miller-Bagwell match was a dud that dragged. The U.S. title match with Benoit and DDP was good. And the Sting-Sid match actually put me to sleep, where I woke up 2 hours later wondering what the hell happened. The Steiner-Goldberg match was as awful as it sounds, and while Steiner didn't end up with a concussion after Goldberg hit the Bret Hart career-killing superkick on him, I felt I had the concussion instead of watching this crap. Not going to lie, I actually enjoyed the Rodman-Savage match. The 100 ref replacements, Savage marveling at the amazing Russian leg sweep by Rodman, the porta potty spot, and Rodman smashing Savage with the camera actually made for an entertaining match. And finally, to end this pay-per-view, we were treated to the 5-star classic in Kevin Nash vs. Hogan in a career vs. career match. Regular 1-star Hogan match with him going over. Nash retired after the event. In other words, he was approved a 3-month vacation by the back office. Overall, I give this show 3 stars out of 10, and even that's being generous. Most of it is throwaway shit unless you like seeing the veteran Kevin Nash putting over the talented new Hogan kid.
We go to Corey Ferreira. WCW in the summer of 1999. What an awful product we got. Where to start about how the main event of Nash and Hogan in the retirement match, and what a shock that Hogan won the match. They had the 46-year-old Hogan beat the 40-year-old Nash. What a stupid booking idea. The older guy doesn't retire, but the younger one does. Benoit and DDP had the best match of the night, but that's not saying much for this show. Plus, it's Benoit and DDP, so you're going to get a good match. This show also shows how far Bill Goldberg fell. This time in 98, he was the second biggest star in wrestling behind Austin. Now he's facing Rick Steiner. Lastly, I'll finish off with the use of Dennis Rodman by this time. Rodman did not have the level of celebrity he did the year before, coming off the NBA Finals with the Bulls and Utah Jazz, which led to the Karl Malone and Rodman angle the year before. Now he's in a shitty match with Randy Savage, where they pin the celebrity. Overall, just a shit show with one good match and the rest just being bad to awful, which pretty much sums up WCW in 1999.
Brian from Buffalo. I'm assuming I'm in the minority here, but I actually ordered this event on pay-per-view, and I have to admit, I bought it because of the Insane Clown Posse. For as big a juggalo as I used to be, they still have no business in a wrestling ring. Sid going over Sting was interesting booking, given that Sting would win the belt at the next month's pay-per-view, and I like Benoit DDP, which included possibly the worst top rope splash in the history of wrestling from Bigelow. And raise your hand if you remember the Jersey Triad, let alone the fact that Bigelow and Canyon were the tag champs here. One of the highlights of this pay-per-view came during the video package for Macho Man and Rodman, when somebody actually said the line, "If Rodman wants to wrestle Macho Man, it will break every record on pay-per-view." Something tells me that didn't happen. Listening to the announcers putting Rodman over was as painful as watching him sell, and I honestly laughed out loud when Tanay said that a Rodman Russian leg sweep was executed to perfection and that he looked like a veteran in the ring. Laughable. Also, Rodman lays out the ref with no DQ. Typical WCW. I also find it hilarious that Savage needed a gorgeous George Runnin and a chain to beat a basketball player in a match that Tony Schiavone says we will never forget. And finally, stop me if you've heard this one before. WCW is having a retirement match. Actually, this match was in a complete tire fire, but with perhaps the two biggest, most fragile egos in the business ever, it's a surprise they were able to book an ending. How long was Nash even gone for? Perhaps the best part about Road Wild 1999 was that this was the last Road Wild event WCW ever had. I give it 4 Hulk ups out of 10.
This was also the last pay-per-view before they removed Eric Bischoff from his position going into the September pay-per-view. Mike Michaels writes, I may be in the minority, but having never seen the majority of the pay-per-view in full since the first airing, I love this show. 1999 WCW had just become such a stale, boring landscape, but this pay-per-view was a breath of fresh air from the dreadful 3-hour Nitro with the endless supply of meaningless angles and performers. Admittedly, nothing really mattered long-term from the show, and soon enough, Russo was in and rebooting everything anyway. But as a standalone pay-per-view, this was totally watchable. I enjoyed watching Steiner and Goldberg trying to smash the fuck out of each other. Rodman was super over, and I thought the clusterfuck with that insane wife-beating Randy Savage character made for a great spectacle. And Nash and Hogan are big stars worthy of a main event in this setting. I'm sure none of us watching then or now would have bought the retirement stipulation, but they still assembled a showcase more befitting of a main event than the arm drag no-sell merchants in the opener or Benoit DDP. WCW took a pummeling for not pushing the young guys or whatever, but the distinct lack of star power in today's WWE product bears out the importance of having the big names on top while the younger talent gets experience. Benoit, Guerrero, and Booker were all okay on this show, but none of them were anywhere near ready to be a top guy, even if the main eventers were getting old. All in all, if I could get 40-year-olds the caliber of Hogan, Nash, and Savage working pay-per-views over our current crop of bland 40-year-olds like Jericho, Big Show, and Kane, I'd take it. You actually just named there a 45-year-old, a 40-year-old, and Big Show, who I believe has also just hit 40. Road Wild 99 has Money in the Bank 2012 licked on that front. Overall, like so much WCW, it was much maligned at the time and unfairly compared to a white-hot, envelope-pushing WWE product. I'd grade it 6.5 out of 10, as it wasn't in the upper echelon of WCW pay-per-views, but was way better than some of the latter abominations and 94-95 disasters.
I mean, you definitely need star power, but you also need people to be able to deliver once you do it.
The stars weren't drawing anymore at this point. Yeah. For this argument about star power, I mean, the star power was not drawing at this point in WCW.
Okay, let's go to finally from Shane Mullally from the Republic of Ireland. Just a few quick thoughts. I couldn't watch the full show, so I don't know how you guys sit through some of these pay-per-views. This was Raven's last appearance for WCW. I thought Eddie Guerrero was a contender for the Scott Putski Award, and Goldberg's song Crush 'Em by Megadeth didn't suit him at all. Sting vs. Sid was crap. The best thing about the Randy Savage vs. Rodman match was Randy's entrance theme, which for some reason had an Asian woman sing, "What a match." he thinks that the voice of Gorgeous George at the beginning of the
what a match.
He thought it sounded like an Asian woman saying what a match. But this was anything but the best thing about the match. The best thing about the match was the opening promo between the two. Just to wrap up quick, I found the motorbikers revving up their engines to be extremely annoying, plus a 20-minute match between Hogan and Kevin Nash is something no human being should have to endure. Plus, wasn't this a free event to all in the audience?
Yes, it was. And that was the final outdoor event for WCW, as they would...
The final Nitro was outdoors.
Oh, that's true. The final Sturgis pay-per-view for the company.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to those of you who watched Road Wild and provided your feedback, which you can always do at the Law message board, lawradio.proboards.com. And next week, Way, we're getting closer and closer to SummerSlam, so I thought we would take a look at SummerSlam, and I'm going to try and rehab your love for wrestling. So we're going to go back. Got a bunch of requests from people of different years, and We had said we were going to do the 2002 show, but I kind of like to wait to do that one till after we see what could be a very big angle next week on Raw with Shawn Michaels Appreciation Night. So before we do 2002, I want to review the 97 show, which was right in the heat of the Canada-US feud, headlined by The Undertaker versus Bret Hart, with Shawn Michaels as the guest referee.
Cool.
With Wrestling with Shadows at ringside.
Oh, right on.
So we will take a look at the 97 show. This was, of course, the event as well, where Steve Austin had the stinger during his match with Owen Hart. A match where someone would have to eat dog food, all of the great things, and a contest way where the WWF was going to give away $1 million.
Wow.
So wait for that one.
I look forward to it.
SummerSlam 97 coming up next week here on Review Away. And also want to make mention that you might be seeing some changes to the website way this week.
Uh-oh.
So.
Uh-oh, what does this mean?
We're kind of out of the loop on this one, me and Way are. So just hang tight.
Does this mean
I don't know.
I will not have access to our archives? What is this?
We're crossing our fingers, folks. We're crossing our fingers that there are not going to be hiccups like we have received in the past.
You know what we suggest? If you wanted to download a show but haven't gotten to it yet, do it before sometime. As soon as you probably listen to this.
Absolutely.
Go out and do it.
Absolutely. We're also back. The MMA report will be up Thursday, featuring Michael Bisping chatting with myself, as well as Todd Martin is going to be on the show. And, Wei, a big announcement is that we are going to be adding a bi-monthly show to the Law family of podcasts hosted by Chris Charlton and W.H. Park, tentatively titled Japanese Audio Wrestling.
Jaw,
yes, okay. Like your jaw. So they will be launching show number one. It might even be up by now. I don't have a clear idea yet of when we are going to have show one up, but they're going to try and do kind of bi-monthly shows. So both men living in Japan, you've heard them on some of our other shows, so that is going to be a new show. So if you're not familiar with Japanese wrestling or just want to keep up on it more, those are two experts in that field. So new show to add. And I think good to have a new show without you and me on it.
Yeah, I think so.
People have got their fill.
I'll be tuning in.
I will too, as we hope most people were. So that'll be up on the site and on iTunes. And folks, if we do experience problems on the website, always go. Podbean always has the shows up there. You can always use that as your backup.
iTunes and Podbean.
iTunes and Podbean. Let's be honest. Those are your best go-to places. I think the majority of you use iTunes from the feedback I get. But if your primary destination is the website, you do have your backup sites. iTunes and lawradio.podbean.com. So just go there. All our shows, all our interviews get put up there. And we archive all of them up there as well. It used to be a limit where we didn't have as many. We have like our last like 200 shows up there. So you can get all that stuff. And then anything else, Way? Oh, shit. We have terrible news. No, we're going to save that for Impact.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, what a teaser.
What
that
a tease.
Is. Music, Way. What would you like to go out with?
I'd like to go out with the new and improved Bill Goldberg theme song, Crush 'Em by Megadeth.
Who were actually performing at the very first Affliction pay-per-view band.
Yeah.
So Megadeth, what a crossover band between wrestling and MMA fans. All right, follow us on Twitter, at Law Radio, at Way0937, and get ready to crush 'em. Crush 'em. I'm